Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind.
Sidebar with Cindy
on Kaya FM 95.9.
Welcome to Kaya FM 95.9, home of the Afropolitan. It's a nice Thursday evening. I hope you had a great day. I had a great day. And we're back on Sidebar with Cindy with me, Dr. Cindy Seofansale. And our podcasts are up. Go to kayafm.co.za and listen to FM Rewind. Tune in, listen to us on the DSTV audio bouquet, channel 861, or listen live on kayafm.co.za.
Medical issues, sex and family,
finance, parenting and emotional development.
Sidebar with Cindy. Sidebar with Cindy. Every Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
So on Sunday, the 26th of May, the South African Anxiety and Depression Group will be launching the hashtag Let's Talk Bipolar. Bipolar disorder affects about 1% of the population in South Africa, which sounds like a low number. But when you take into consideration that there are 56 million people in South Africa, 1% is quite a large number. And bipolar disorder is probably one of the most misunderstood mental illnesses. And this is why there's still a stigma attached to it and why few people get diagnosed properly with bipolar mood disorder. And so this evening, we'll be chatting to two psychiatrists. We'll be chatting to Dr. Antoinette Merrick, and we'll also be chatting to Dr. Lavinia Lumu, and they'll be telling us about bipolar disorder. What I'm looking forward to is your calls on 086-000-959 and your SMSs on 36959. On Twitter, the hashtag is SidebarCindyKFMTalk. So let's welcome our guests. Good evening, Dr. Antoinette and Dr. Lavinia.
Good evening.
Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Dr. Cindy.
So I think it's always important for us to start off with definitions. I never take it for granted that people know what anything is. So let's start off with definitions of what bipolar is. And then, Lavinia, if you could go into the symptoms associated with bipolar disorder. So we'll start off with you, Dr. Antoinette Merrick.
So bipolar disorder is a mood disorder, which means it fits in the category of mental health disorders, which includes depression.
Yes.
But depression and bipolar disorder are on a mood spectrum, and I like to think of them as on each side of the spectrum. So on the one side, you have depression, where you have, and Lavinia will explain the symptoms, and on the other side, you have bipolar disorder. And it is a mood disorder, which is a chronic relapsing disorder.
Okay, so chronic meaning it's long-term.
It's long-term.
And relapsing, it keeps coming back.
It can keep coming back.
Okay, all right.
And because of that, that's why it's so important to get an accurate diagnosis and treatment.
Okay, all right. Dr. Lumu, the symptoms of bipolar disorder.
All right. It's important to just be aware that with the stigma of mental disorders, that symptomatology needs to be quite clear. Bipolar has two poles, so that's why they call it bipolar. So it can be two spectrums. A person can present with depressive symptoms, or they can present with manic symptoms or hypomanic symptoms. So it's a very difficult diagnosis to make because the different poles of the disorder can present at different times. So usually with patients who present with bipolar, they can present with either a depressive episode or a manic episode or a hypomanic episode. So with a depressive episode, they'll typically have symptoms whereby they have a low, very low mood and loss of interest in activities, changes in sleep, appetite, energy, and in more severe cases, isolation, withdrawal, decline in functioning, suicidality, and that's important to be aware of because these symptoms can go on for up to a minimum of 2 weeks every day, persisting quite severe symptoms. So you can get a patient who presents in that episode. So the only time you are clear that it's bipolar is when they've had a manic episode or a hypomanic episode. So mania is characterized by a cluster of symptoms, and patients need need to have these symptoms for up to a week, constantly, okay, every day. Because some people read the one symptom and think, oh, I have mania. Yeah. So it can range from severe irritability, yeah, aggression, dysphoria, euphoria, this elated mood that just comes from nowhere. And it can go on almost every day for 7 days. And then it can also range from changes in sleep. So what typically happens, they don't want to sleep. They're not tired. They're just on this go. They have lots of energy, an increase in new ideas, flights of ideas, a sort of grandiosity where they just feel invincible, like they can take on the world, lots of energy, thoughts, speed is increased, their speech is pressured. And why it's like a natural high, and a lot of patients kind of get stuck in it and not aware of what's going on. In severe cases, a person can become psychotic where they lose touch with reality, and it can result in hospital admission. So okay, those are the general spectrums between the two. So you can present with a depressive episode, mm-hmm, but the difficulty is then distinguishing if a person has never had a manic or hypomanic episode, which is shorter, which is about 4 days, if they haven't had a manic or hypomanic episode, if they present in a depressive episode, it becomes difficult for the doctor.
The diagnosis?
So one needs to take a very careful history.
Okay.
Because if you give the medication for depression,
yeah,
you could actually, in some instances, cause them to be manic or hypomanic. And then you'll know then that,
okay,
they're
bipolar. And I think a lot of the reading around bipolar specifies that it is quite difficult to make the diagnosis. And this is why history taking is very important. So you're listening to Sidebar with Cindy, with me, Cindy Fancel, and I have two psychiatrists in studio, Dr. Lavinia Lumu and Dr. Antoinette Mirich, and we're talking about bipolar disorder. So coming back to you, Dr. Antoinette, so someone on Twitter is asking, can you discuss the link between narcissism and bipolar disorder if they exist? So this tweet came from Lerato Wabantu, at Lerato Wabantu.
That's a really interesting question. So narcissism is a term I see very frequently, actually, on social media.
Yeah.
And it relates to someone with an elevated sense of self, an elevated self-esteem.
Okay.
It generally refers to a characteristic or a temperament which that person has, or a personality type. Bipolar disorder, there is no specific link between the two.
Okay.
So if you have narcissism, it doesn't mean you have bipolar disorder. I think where people can get confused is, as Dr. Lumu said, when people go very high, they start believing things about themselves.
So those delusions of grandeur, mm, could, yes, come across as narcissistic elements.
Yes, and they don't even have to be delusions, because, okay, delusions are, you know, really out there. They, okay, can just be an inflated self-esteem.
Okay.
And that they really think they're invincible. They're not anxious. They're super confident. And for some people, it works in their favor for a little while. Where narcissism will be a trait that person will have all,
okay,
the time.
Okay. So we have Ursula from Boxburg. Ursula, thank you for calling. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Yes. I wanted to know from the panelists, I've been having a problem at my workplace whereby bipolar is being placed as something that is madness, and then I went to see a psychiatrist, I've been on treatment, and then taken off treatment again because my manager said that I was over-medicated and that maybe there was a misdiagnosis. And then when they say, what is the difference between bipolar disorder and depression? Because I wanted a second opinion. And as far as I'm concerned, people are treated very badly when they are diagnosed with depression, and all they are called mad, or they are called all sorts of names.
Yeah.
And this month is a month of mental health.
Okay.
So what can I do to get the right second opinion?
Okay, so let's just get one thing clear from you. So you were started on medication by a psychiatrist?
Yes, I was depressed after my mother's death.
Okay.
And then also because of work issues where my boss was harassing me.
Okay.
And then when I went for a second opinion, when I came back from the second opinion, one of my managers said that I was over-medicated, that this doctor was over-medicating me.
Okay, so...
And then,
okay, so Ursula, the second...
So I wanted to know, because I didn't get a panelist name, and I wanted to know, where do I go for a right diagnosis? One. Two, I want to find out, because somebody gave me advice to go to SADAC.
Okay, so we'll get your details and we'll be in touch with you. So I just need to ask one more thing before you leave. So who gave?
Can I please listen to the answer? On
yes, you will. Just after I ask the question, who gave the second opinion? Was it a medical doctor or was it a GP or another psychiatrist?
It was a psychiatrist.
Another psychiatrist.
He's a psychiatrist. But then after a while, because of my work situation, he became hostile. And when I went there, because they sent me to Alexandra for.
Okay.
To a second opinion. And the woman said that the psychiatrist gave her analysis and said that my work was unfairly.
Okay.
They were unfair towards me.
Okay, so we had
so
this.
Then
yeah.
So then what happened is that I wanted then another opinion because they at work were giving me stress. They don't recognize mental issues.
Okay.
And they make things very hard for anybody that has depression or bipolar or any disorder.
Okay, Ursula, thank you very much. I think we've got the full picture.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So Ursula's brought up quite a few issues. I think the first thing that's coming through there is an issue that this is the reason why most people won't disclose their mental illnesses at work. So the workplace and stigma in the workplace. She's also brought up the issue of, you know, doctor hopping, right? So we're going to discuss that. And of course, then, you know, getting to a proper diagnosis. So Dr. Antoinette Merich, would you like to start? And then we'll cross over to Dr. Lavinia Loom.
So, I think Ursula finds herself in a very common predicament.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just talk about the workplace and the stigma in the workplace. People and HRs and people in the community do not understand mental illness. They do not understand depression. A lot of them don't have training, have never been exposed to it. And it can be a very stigmatizing, you know, situation for their employees. So I hear what she's saying. It sounds like there was a diagnosis made, and then perhaps someone at work was questioning the diagnosis and she had a second opinion. It seems like that's what happened. And I think that does commonly happen when there's issues of disability and time off work. However, disclosing at work is something I always discuss very carefully with my patients, specifically bipolar disorder. You know, we should be saying, you know what, you can disclose, you've got the right to disclose. But I always say just be very careful of who you're disclosing to. Make sure that when you do it, you've got the backing of a psychiatrist, a psychologist, with the appropriate paperwork. Because people generally just don't understand.
Yeah, and I'm very open about my mental illness. I'm living with depression. And the thing is, coming out with your mental illness, you are judged. Even that you've ever done before, you're judged for it. And even that you do thereafter,
correct,
you're judged for it. And this is why, I could afford to come out because I have all the support that I need. And my coming out has helped other people. But you might not be in that situation where you can speak out about your mental illness. So that's the first thing. So that's the workplace. The second issue that she brought up, which I'm concerned about, is how her work is now being judged harshly according to her mental illness, and she mentioned a few companies. And so, you know, Dr. Lumu, would you like to just talk about that?
Yeah, so there's specific procedures that need to be followed if an employer has an employee where they're worried that their illness it might impact on their ability to work.
Yeah.
So for Ursula, in her case, if the boss felt that she was over-sedated on the medication, the first thing that should have happened was for the boss to obtain permission from Ursula to say, look, can we put in writing our concerns to the treating psychiatrist to make the treating psychiatrist aware of what is happening. And, you know, sometimes it would have been a simple adjustment of medication. Or if the psychiatrist is concerned, take the necessary measures to ensure that, Ursula is accommodated in the workplace. And it seems what happened in her case is that the employer went and obtained a second opinion. And the thing is, great that you get a second opinion, but sometimes recommendations should have been provided, because sometimes what companies do, they have an insurance company, and then the insurance company has an independent sort of practitioner who does an independent assessment, and usually there's recommendations to say, look, is this person fit to work? If not, you know, we don't board or, you know, recommend boarding as a, but what can be done to accommodate the Ursula? So I think in this case, I think we need a little bit more work. I agree with Dr. Antoinette that there's a lot of stigma. I am having to find with my patients that I don't even put the fact that I'm a specialist psychiatrist on a sick note. I just put the essential information. And thankfully, I mean, the laws have changed. We're no longer required as doctors to disclose what the condition is.
And I think this is important for people to know that as a medical doctor, we don't put a diagnosis on the medical certificate. So all we have to write is general medical condition or you know, unless you say that we should put the diagnosis on. And I know that HR will try and twist your arm and make it seem as if, no, we won't accept this note because there's no diagnosis on it. You have the right to not disclose your diagnosis. So we don't do that. So I hope that's clear to everybody.
And secondly, if work is querying the diagnosis, the onus is on the employer to put into writing what their concerns
are.
So
everything must always be in writing.
In writing. And to engage the treating doctor to say, look, she's over-sedated, we're concerned, she's operating heavy machinery, what must happen? So in terms of the issue is also with moving from doctor to doctor. Firstly, diagnosing bipolar is very difficult, and one can switch from depressive episode to a manic episode over 2 years. Like the 1 year they can have a depressive episode, you think you're treating depression, you put them on, and then the next year they become manic. So it's best to try and stick with one person, and if you have side effects, go back to the doctor and say, look, this has developed. And then we try, unfortunately it's trial and error, because there's no one drug that fits every patient with bipolar. Patients are very unique in terms of their response to treatment. So I'd encourage Ursula to go back to her treating doctor to try and, you know, sort out her medication combination, and to see the areas that, you know, the doctor can look at accommodating in terms of suitability for work. Sometimes as psychiatrists we have to refer to occupational therapists as well to assist us to ascertain, can this person work, what are the deficits at work, how can they be accommodated at work.
And Dr. Merich, if a person was to get medically boarded, what symptoms would warrant a person being medically boarded after being diagnosed with bipolar disorder?
So I think to understand the term medically boarded, we're looking at the words temporary and permanent disability. We really, really discourage permanent disability in all psychiatric illnesses, unless it's been going on for years with very poor response to medication. So it would be a temporary boarding. And the process would be that you would approach your HR or your employer with a note. And it does depend. I find in the small businesses it's a problem, because they don't have disability insurances. They don't, if that employee goes out, they're losing money. But definitely in the corporates or any big organization in the public sector, you need to go through HR. There are processes, temporary disability, 3 to 6 months.
And you're part of the process. So you're being informed of what's happening and what's going on the whole way through. This is not happening without your
No.
Your
in fact, the psychiatrist often starts the process. Mm-hmm. We would write a letter, say, please start the process for temporary disability. I'm putting the patient on sick leave. And then there's a backwards and forwards between the relevant agents. And the big corporates, they have outside insurances who then liaise with us. And a team of people.
Back to our topic of bipolar disorder, and I'm chatting to Dr. Lavinia Lumu and to Dr. Antoinette Merich. So let's talk about medication. We spoke about it before the break. So I'd like to know, what medication do we give patients that are that have bipolar disorder, and the different drugs and the side effects as well, Dr. Merich?
So I think one thing to just understand as before I talk about medication is bipolar disorder is a condition which often starts in the late teens. Mm-hmm. So we typically say between the ages of 18 and 24. However, it generally takes a good 12 years to get an accurate diagnosis.
Yo, that's a very long time.
And this is because it is a long time. And this is because patients often first present with depression.
Okay.
Then they'll go to a GP and they'll get given an antidepressant, which may or may not work, but it may work for a little bit, but then it stops working. And then they go back and they may try another antidepressant or they just go off treatment completely. And by the time they have reached a psychiatrist who's someone who can make the diagnosis, they've kind of been in an untreated state for quite a few years. And so this is one of the difficulties. So one of the big things we're trying to do is to try and educate people to say, listen, if your moods are changing dramatically, please seek help and please continue to seek help. In terms of once you are actually diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and this is why it is very important to make the diagnosis, because the medications are quite specific. So in bipolar disorder, we typically use a class of drugs called mood stabilizers.
Yes.
We also use a class of drugs called antipsychotics and, in some people, antidepressants. Mood stabilizers, for people who may have heard of these, the big one is lithium, Epilim, lamotrigine, which is Epitech as well.
And these are also anti-epileptics.
Yes, so they are anti-epileptics. So people get confused because they see on the box it says this is for epilepsy, mm-hmm. and they don't quite understand. But if you can imagine, you know, if they're given for epilepsy, they stabilize the mind, and that's what they do in bipolar disorder. So they stabilize the brainwaves, for lack of a better term. Antipsychotics are... it's a funny name, but they are medications which were originally made for schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
However, they found to work in bipolar disorder in terms of not that you're psychotic, but just to stabilize the ups and downs.
Okay, so what we're trying to do is to get you on an even keel and not to be swinging between the two moods.
Yes.
Okay.
And it is a trial and error process.
Mm-hmm.
And we often will use a combination of medications in bipolar disorder. And the big thing to know about medication is once your medication is correct, you need to stay on it.
Okay.
Because every time you go off medication and restart, it's almost like you're immune to some of the medication. So we often have to use higher doses and new medications.
I see. So you build some form of resistance, for lack of a better word.
Yes, because we think there's damage, brain damage, every single time there's an episode.
I see.
So therefore, the medications become less effective.
Mm.
So the trick is to, once you get your diagnosis, to work with your doctor, because all of these medications, if you talk about bipolar, people talk about side effects. And the side effects most commonly are weight gain, sedation, and concentration and memory problems. And you can imagine these are not great side effects. However, if you work closely with your psychiatrist, you can minimize side effects. You can find medication that works for you. And you can also at some stage maybe choose which side effects you might want to live with just in order to maybe get a good night's sleep.
And that's a very realistic point of view, you know, because some things you just have to live with.
Yeah.
But as long as you know what you have to live with, it makes it easy to accept.
Yes. And I think that's why you need to have that relationship with your psychiatrist. And as Dr. Loomis said, you know, if you're having side effects, please don't just stop the medication. Go back to the same psychiatrist if possible, because they'll know why they chose that and then they can choose something else. If you do, you know, doctor hop, which happens all the time.
Yeah.
You sort of go back to square one quite often.
So each time you change doctors or each time you stop your medication, you're starting from ground zero.
Yes.
Okay, so we have a caller. We have Michael from Johannesburg. Good evening, Michael, and welcome to Sidebar with Cindy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you, and thanks for calling.
Hi. I've been listening here the explanation of bipolar.
Yes.
I was married to somebody who was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, but we divorced now. And I've done enough extensive research about BPD. I'm not a doctor or anything. But during the explanation here of bipolar, it looks like somebody with borderline personality disorder can also be a BP, a bipolar person, but a BP cannot be a BPD. Am I correct in saying that? Because now, you explaining bipolar, you mainly mentioned depressive and manic, and then when you talk borderline personality disorder, we're talking something between neurosis and psychosis. But during the explanation, unless if I don't understand the explanation of bipolar. And if it is true that a BPD can also have BP, then I have a problem, because BPD mainly, it is treated through therapy. The most notable one being that one by Dr. Marshalline and DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, where there are the others that have been researched by the likes of your Dr. Otto von Kerenberg, and etc.
Okay.
So my question is just that. I think I'm clear on that one.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Okay, so we'll start with Dr. Lavinia Lumi. Thank you so much, Michael. That is a great, great call. He's done his research, for sure.
Clearly he has, and I'm glad he has. That's a very good question, a very important question. We have personality disorders, which are described within psychiatry as a class of disorders that are sort of, I call them disorders of development, and it's based on a person's temperament. When you're born, with certain traits and temperaments that form part of your personality, and your personality fully develops and forms at the age of 18, and depending on your upbringing and what you've been exposed to and your core temperament, it'll determine what kind of personality you'll have as an adult. So sometimes in psychiatry, we see persons with personality disorders. So dependent on what has happened, if there have been disruptions in developments, minor things like child problems with the parents divorcing, or more traumatic things like child abuse or any sort of trauma or parenting difficulties, that can cause disruptions and result in a personality disorder later on in life. Borderline personality disorder is very common, because they call it borderline because the patients kind of present as borderline anything at some point. They can come in as borderline manic, borderline psychotic, and one has to be very careful because, as Michael has rightfully said, the management for personality disorder, specifically borderline personality disorder, as he said, is through therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, versus bipolar, which is based on neurochemical imbalances in the brain.
Okay.
And you require medication for it. So with borderline personality disorder, they get what are known as mood dysregulation.
Okay.
And it's usually reactive. So, for example, a person with borderline personality disorder, in the morning, they tell you, you know, doctor, I had a fight with my husband in the morning and I was so angry. I went into a rage. I threw things out the window. And then afterwards, I went to work and then someone smiled at me. And then I was on top of the world. And then I got home and Game of Thrones didn't end well. And then I was depressed and suicidal. So they go through what is known as throughout the day, dysregulation, and it's in reaction to what is happening around them.
Okay.
Because they don't have the ability to contain the emotions.
Or to filter certain things.
They haven't learned the skills to cope. Versus someone who is depressed. They will be depressed for at least 2 weeks, if not longer. They're so depressed, nothing will change that depressive mood. Or if they're manic, it will go on and on, irrespective of what's happening. It goes on. It's clear in the criteria for mania. It's up to 7 days that the person has that mood state with other symptoms as well. It's a cluster of symptoms. For depression, at least 5 symptoms on the criteria. For mania, at least 4 symptoms. So it's a cluster, not just one.
Okay.
So that's the main difference.
Okay, well, it's 25 to 8 and you're listening to Sidebar with Cindy on Kai FM 95.9. Dr. Mirich, I wanted to ask, so is bipolar disorder hereditary?
So I get often asked this, and often when I've actually spoken about it on radio or somewhere, people do get quite a fright. But it is a hereditary condition.
Okay.
Which means that if there is a first degree member, so your mom, dad, or sibling, which has bipolar disorder, you are at increased risk of having it.
Okay.
If you have it, you also are at increased risk of transmitting it to your child. But remember what I said right in the beginning, that bipolar disorder is a cluster of mood disorders. So your children may be at increased risk of depression, or you may be at increased risk of depression if there's someone with bipolar that is in the family. So we think it's an inherited vulnerability to a mood disorder. But the inheritability, as we would call it, is with a first degree relative is about 5 to 10%. So it's not automatic. So people mustn't panic. However, if there is bipolar disorder in the family and someone becomes depressed or is unwell, please take them to be assessed, because you can't leave people when you know that there is mental illness in the family. So that's really important.
Okay, so we're still taking your calls on 086-000-959, and you can SMS us on 36959 and hashtag sidebar Cindy Kaya FM Talk. Dr. Lumu, I wanted to find out, how do these disorders present in children and teenagers? Because, I mean, we're speaking about adults, but children can also present with bipolar disorder.
All right. Yeah, usually the progression of bipolar disorder, it's very rare in children.
Okay.
And usually what tends to happen is round about the teenage years with bipolar, it's typically depressive episodes that start off. So they come in as depressed the 1 year. So it's very difficult, and it requires history taking, establishing in the family, is there a history of bipolar, is there a history of depression, because the genes are shared. It's very rare in children, but it can happen, and if it does happen in young children, one would need to be assessed by a child psychiatrist. Depression is more common in children, and we see a lot of that with the pressures of the school system, lots of bullying. So parents need to be sort of plugged in to what is happening with their children. A child who's withdrawn, having nightmares, not wanting to go to school, school refusal, reporting bullying, or withdrawn child, one needs to look out for that child, because especially in children and adolescents, unfortunately, when a person goes into a depressive episode, the incidences of suicide, our suicide rates are going up quite a lot. And a lot of times, unfortunately, you know, if someone has a first episode of depression and it's untreated, it can result in a suicide, as death.
And with bipolar disorder, there's a 15 times higher risk of suicide, you know, in the population than the general population.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I think one of the recent stats I saw was there's between about a 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 risk of a suicide attempt. And I mean, I would say it's very high. It's a good 15-20% maybe of people with bipolar may eventually die by suicide. In my population, I would say at least 75% have attempted at some stage. So it's not something to take lightly. Just one thing on the teenagers. I don't want parents to get worried about their teenagers. You know, teenagers can look very bipolar, and because their moods are up and down all the time. So you really need to look at the bigger picture, how they're functioning at school. So if they're doing okay at school, but then just screaming at you in the afternoon, that's not bipolar.
Right, so that's just parenting issues. You may just, you know, be strong.
Yes, basically.
Okay, and if a teen is diagnosed with depression, you know, the obviously the best person to see is a child psychiatrist. And until what age can you take a child? At what age do child psychiatrists stop treating?
So, I mean, I think
it's a cutoff.
I think in South Africa, I would say more. You know, if you're worried about bipolar, see a child psychiatrist. We don't have enough child psychiatrists.
So what's the age cutoff? Is it 18,
normally
16.
It's normally 18.
Okay,
but,
all right.
I mean, there are only about 8. In private in Gauteng, so it would generally be a general psychiatrist or your GP in terms of depression. Mm. And then if they are not managing the condition, they can refer on.
Kaya FM 95.9, home of the Afropolitan. So sidebar Cindy, and you're listening to me, and I'm chatting to Lavinia, Dr. Lavinia Lumu, and to Dr. Antoinette Mirage. So Dr. Lavinia, in our culture, the black community, mental illness is something that is difficult to discuss. We really talk about it. I think we're getting better now because of social media and all the exposure that's been happening, and with people like me coming out with our mental illnesses. How do you cope with that in practice? And what do you see in your practice?
Okay, no, that's a very important question. Stigma is a problem nationwide, countrywide, worldwide, but it's even more of a problem amongst the black community, African community. I think the issue is that with us as black people, we don't have an understanding of mental illness. If anyone is depressed, I remember when I was training in psychiatry and you are asking an African person if they're depressed, there isn't actually a word for depression.
Yes, that's the first thing.
Yeah, people talk about painful veins and neck pain, you know, but there's no word. There's no word for depression. I think that's the first thing. You're either mad and you must go either to a traditional healer because maybe you've been bewitched, or you go to church. And that's what tends to happen with a lot of patients. And you know, the issue is, as a result of that, I find that with African patients, there's a delay in presentation. And as Dr. Merrick said earlier, unfortunately, untreated depression, untreated mania, untreated psychosis can be sort of damaging to the brain. So the later you present, the worse your prognosis, the poorer your response to treatment. So the first challenge is, when I do a history, you'll find that no one is able to say in the family who has a mental illness or what it is and what medication. Because there's a thing called pharmacogenomics, whereby we are able to say, okay, your mom responded to this antidepressant, so we will go for this antidepressant and you'll have a good response. We're not able to even do that.
Because we haven't got a proper history, collateral history.
Family history. So all we are able to know is, oh, the crazy uncle who, and you know, who's
and we
in the
all
village.
Have a crazy uncle.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Who's in the village somewhere, or, you know, unfortunately, some people on the street, not all, some people on the street who end up on the street, they probably have untreated a mental illness. So collaborating with traditional healers, collaborating with church leaders is an important thing. So, you know,
and the importance there is to treat patients holistically. So
yes.
We're not rubbishing. So, you know, even though we practice Western medicine, you're not going to rubbish, you know, something else, because if you do that, you shut the patient out of everything.
Yes.
Right? They'll drop everything.
Yes.
So it's important for us to be able to transfer patients in and out of, yes, of both sectors of medicine.
Yeah. So I think what has happened is there's been unfortunately a lot of famous people, celebrities have died as a result of suicide, and it's sad that it had to reach that point for an awakening that's happening in our country amongst the black communities to acknowledge that we need to take a step. And even your work that you're doing, Dr. Cindy, to create awareness, to advocate that it's okay, just because you have a mental illness, it doesn't define you, it doesn't mean you can't function, just go on medication, get help, and you can be functional. So then I find with us as black people, there's often a confusion between having a psychiatric illness and a intellectual disability. So just because you're diagnosed with bipolar doesn't mean now you're not clever, you can't study, you can't be a lawyer or a doctor or do whatever you used to do on medication.
Okay.
So we often see traditional healers, people who've gone to traditional healers, and sometimes ukthwasa, the calling,
yes,
is a common presentation that we see in psychiatry, where it's sort of gray. Is the person really psychotic, or is there a cultural calling or ukthwasa that's happening where they need to go and they've been called to become a sangoma? And, you know, sometimes it's happened where a patient comes to us and they've actually consulted a good traditional healer and they said that, no, this person is not undergoing ukthwasa. They've consulted their ancestors, and in actual fact, this is a psychiatric illness, and, you know, we are going to treat them. Or sometimes we treat them and then they still need to go and undergo the calling. So sometimes it's a bit gray, and in those cases, we find a way to work with traditional healers.
It's important for us to work together.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'll be taking a call from Piwa, 086-00-00959. Piwa from Forslaras, thanks for calling.
Hi, Dr. Cindy.
Hi.
I would like to find out. So I've been diagnosed with depression about 3 years now.
Yes.
Been on medication for the entire 3 years. How long has someone has to be on medication? Because sometimes I would feel that I'm feeling better now. However, obviously, when you go to your psychiatrist, they would tell you to still continue taking the medication. But there are times where I would stay a week or two without medication and I'm functioning properly.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Thank you. I'll listen on the radio.
Okay. Dr. Antoinette Mirich?
Yeah, it's a very common question. So the caller was saying that she's been treated for depression
for three years.
Yeah. So the standard answer I'll give is please consult with the doctor who prescribed the medication and discuss it with them. However, it all depends on how many episodes you've had of depression. So if it is your first episode, doctors will generally, you know, say you will need to be on medication. I'm talking about depression now, not bipolar
disorder. Yes, depression, yeah, because she specifically spoke about depression, yeah. Yes.
So if it's your first episode, you know, at least 6 to 12 months. However, depression, like bipolar disorder, is often a relapsing condition. And we know that once it relapses, so after one episode which is treated and you're off medication, you've got a 50 to 60% chance of having another episode. If you have another episode, we say you need to be on medication for even longer, so say 2 years. Once you've hit your third episode, we are saying 5 years plus in terms of medication.
And some people could stay on medication for life.
Yes.
Okay.
So it really depends on which episode it is. Mm-hmm. It depends on how she's functioning. It depends on the stresses in her life. However, you know, if she's going on and off, it's probably not a good idea. She needs to speak to someone and decide, I'm either going to go on or off. If she does go off, you know, do it under medical supervision. Tell your doctor, go see your doctor a month later and say, I've come off the medication. You know.
And how do you wean patients off of medication? I think that's an important thing to ask.
So in terms of antidepressants, antidepressants have quite a bad rap. I think I just want to clear the myth that they're not addictive medications. People feel they are addictive because often when you come off them, you experience withdrawal symptoms. Just because you experience those symptoms does not mean it's addictive. However, when you go off medication, any psychiatric medication, you need to go off slowly. So I do not recommend people just stopping it cold turkey. The majority of people will have withdrawal symptoms, nausea, they'll feel even more anxious, they'll feel even more sad. And then a lot of people get a fright and they say, oh, the anxiety's back and the depression's back. And I'm like, no, it's not back, it's just withdrawal. Whereas if you tapered it over, say, a month or 2 months, you could be fine.
And this is basically gradually decreasing
the dose
as we go on until you're on nothing.
Until you're on nothing. Okay. That would be the best way.
Okay. And in terms of the sleeping tablets, because the sleeping tablets is what is addictive, right? So the antidepressants, the antipsychotics, the mood stabilizers are not addictive. It's the sleeping tablets that are addictive. How long do you generally prescribe them for?
So,
because I was on them for 6 months and then I was weaned off.
Yeah. So in a case of depression, one of the big things in treating depression and bipolar disorder is getting the sleep right. So the majority of patients, they may need to be on them for a month, 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, depending how long it takes in order for the sleep to normalize.
Okay.
So it really is case dependent. But however, if you need them to sleep, you need to take them, but they need to be monitored. And also, if you do have an addictive personality, it's really important to discuss it with your doctor because there are alternates that aren't so addictive.
Okay. So we'll be taking a call, 086-00-00-959. We have Tracy from Pretoria. Good evening, Tracy, and welcome to the show.
Hi there. I had a question about hospitals and their training for people with psychiatric disorders. My husband has bipolar and he usually deals with it quite well, but he did have an episode in December. And in order to book him in to his hospital, we had to go to the emergency room. And there, the people seemed like they didn't really understand what was happening with him. They actually ended up aggravating him. And I actually had to stop them at one point, get in between him and the nurse, and explain to her what was happening, what bipolar was, what this episode was, and the way that she was handling it was actually aggravating him.
Okay.
So I just wanted to know, do other health care professionals get any training on this sort of thing?
Thank you, Tracy. Dr. Lavinia Lumu will be answering your question.
Thanks.
Yeah, Tracy raises a very important thing. Unfortunately, the discipline of psychiatry has undergone a lot of stigma. Older healthcare professionals didn't get exposure to psychiatry. There used to be a lot of institutions long ago. And in line with the Constitution, things have had to change. There's deinstitutionalization, and it's promoting sort of destigmatizing and integrating mental health into general healthcare. And actually, mental health should not be separate from overall health care. It's unfortunate that it's been separated. So
we're moving away from working in silos and trying to integrate.
Exactly. Okay. So moving away from that, with the younger professionals, health professionals, doctors, nurses, allied health professionals, as part of the Constitution with the Mental Health Care Act, every patient is supposed to present to an emergency casualty, because a lot of times their medical problems that can mimic psychiatric disorders that need to be excluded. So it's unfortunate that they had a bad experience, but I mean, things are changing, and through platforms like this, hopefully we can get through not only to the general population, but to also our colleagues, our healthcare professionals.
Okay. So the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAG, is commemorating bipolar disorder on Sunday, the 26th of May. So the hashtag is Let's Talk Bipolar, and the aim is to break the stigma around bipolar disease, educate people, and make sure that everyone understands what bipolar disorder is. So in closing, some closing statements from you, Dr. Antoinette Mirich, and Dr. Lavinia Lumu, about bipolar disorder.
So I think the one important thing to understand is people can live with bipolar, and that's one of my big emphasis. One thing we haven't actually spoken about, we've spoken a lot about medication and bipolar, but I strongly feel there's a big role for therapy and psycho and education of the family. So if you have a loved one diagnosed with bipolar, or you yourself have bipolar, please read up as much as you can. SADAG has got amazing information on their website about bipolar. Half of the treatment is education. So it is something you can live with. But it does need to be diagnosed properly, medicated properly, and then you need the education and therapy.
Dr. Lavinia Lumu?
I'd just like to add to that just because you have bipolar, it does not mean that you can't be functional, achieve what you need to achieve, have children. We're at a stage where you can be medicated and have children when you have bipolar. So just because you have bipolar, it's not a death sentence. And I'd encourage people to reach out and seek help, and so that we lessen the stigma with bipolar.
And where can we find you, Dr. Lavinia?
Well, Dr. Merrick and I are in private practice. So if you Google, but any psychiatrist is available online, you can Google us online and you can obtain our contact details.
Okay, so where do you work?
I work at Akiso Clinic. It's a private clinic. Akiso is a network of private psychiatric clinics throughout the country in different regions. In Johannesburg, there's Akiso Randburg, where I'm based. There's Akiso Parktown, and yeah, throughout the country. Anyone can Google which Akiso would suit them.
Okay, and Antoinette, you're a prolific tweeter, so I like you. I see you on Twitter every day. So what's your Twitter handle?
It's Dr. Mirich. DrMirich. I tweet about anything mental health care related. I'm also in private practice, and I work in Saxonwold at the Oxford Healthcare Centre. But if anyone's looking for psychiatrists, you know, contact SADAG. They've got a big network of psychiatrists who are specifically interested in bipolar. And they also there's a huge network of psychiatric clinics in the community. And although it does require often a bit of a wait, there are psychiatrists there, just like Dr. Lumu and myself. That's where we trained and are from. So please seek help.
Okay. And in closing, I'd just like to say that, you know, living with a mental illness is nothing to be ashamed of. You know, there is help. And, you know, to get help, you need to seek it. So my message is, if you've recognized any symptoms on the show and you feel that you need help, please get help. That's my message for Bipolar Week, and the hashtag being Let's Talk Bipolar. We'll continue the chat on Twitter on Sidebar Cindy, hashtag Sidebar Cindy, hashtag KFM Talk.
Sidebar with Cindy.
Every Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Rewinding
Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.